Intervju Radija Študent. Medijsko sektoriranje na Irskem. Well, in the merry month of May, no from me home I started, left the girls and two one day. Nadaljujemo kampanjo Dovolj nam je zmede. Pogovarjali smo se z Alanom Brnom z irskega skupnostnega radija Dundalk FM o zakonski in finančni ureditvi tretjega medijskega sektorja na Irskem. Kako se financirajo in kako so notranje urejeni, smo motrili skozi prizmo notranje ureditve našega radija in iskali podobnosti, predvsem pa odkrivali razlike. Razložili smo, kako je zakonodajalec preprečil privatno izkoriščanje javnega denarja v imenu tretjega medijskega sektorja, kar je bila v preteklosti v Sloveniji večkratna praksa za izigravanje zakonodaje. Skupnostni radiji na Irskem so, kot nam je na primeru radija Dundalk FM orisal Brn, lahko tudi povezovalni člen med skupnostmi v Republiki Irski in tistimi na Severnem Irskem.
So, how is the legislation in Ireland arranged regarding the third media sector, and like how is the third media sector defined in the legislation?
Okay, yeah, well, there was a Broadcasting Act in 2009, and the Broadcasting Authority allows the third sector radio to get licenses on a temporary basis, so they can get it either for 30 days or for 100 days. In a 12-month period. So that means if there's an area where there's people who are interested in setting up a community radio, it could be a small town or it could be a large rural area, they can make an application to the government to get a 100-day license, which means they could theoretically broadcast every weekend. And this is relatively quick and simple to do. There's very few restrictions. If you're looking for a full-time license, that's quite difficult. It can take a number of years. So at the minute, there are about 21 community radio stations in the country. There are about 29 commercial stations, and there are about four or five quasi-national and national stations. So we belong to the third sector. We set up in 20 years ago, 2004, we got our full license. And the last station in Ireland to get a license, I think, was in 2015, was Radio Kilkenny. So it's quite difficult to get a full-time license for a community radio station, but it's easy to get a part-time license. There's a section 64 of the Broadcasting Act that more or less defines what a third sector radio or community radio is. And that is to address and seek to provide what's called social benefit to the community. So our area is Dundalk and five mile, 8 kilometres. There's about 50,000 people living in the area. And our goal is to provide relevant programming for all the community groups and all the individuals that live in the area. So we would be, I suppose, the same as most other community radio stations. We've a small number of paid staff and we have about 80 volunteers.
Okay, thank you very much for your answer. So, if I continue, like, we have this thing in Slovenia that there are, like, big media corporations that at some point bought some, I don't know, local communal media that were part of the third media sector, and they are still, like, exploiting the fact that and all the privileges that the third media sector gets, even though that these radios are right now like privatized and in the hands of the like very big private media companies. So in this context, I wonder, like, are there also any loopholes or gray areas in the legislation that the profitable private media can exploit in Ireland too?
No, I think the loopholes have been closed with the 2009 Act, insofar as it's very clear there's either a commercial radio station and they're only 29, 30, and they all kind of cover larger areas, maybe with 300,000 people in them. So, for example, there's 26 counties in the Republic of Ireland, and most of those counties would have one radio station. The one for Louth and Meath is LMFM, so that's a commercial station. And we're in Dundalk, so that station would have about 300,000 probably listeners. We're in Dundalk as a community radio, and we've got 50,000 people we can broadcast to. We can't be sold, and we're independent because we adhere to the AMARC Charter for Europe. Our editorial is independent. We're called a company limited by guarantee. So we're not a limited company like a commercial company. We're a community company, a not-for-profit company, which is CLG. I think half of the stations in Ireland are now charities as well, registered charities. Okay, so charities can't be sold for a profit.
Okay, so you've dig a bit, I think, a little into it, but could you maybe elaborate a bit more on, like, how does your radio station finance itself, or how is it financed?
All right, so we take in some advertising, not a lot, and our advertising is quite cheap, so it means that local businesses can afford to pay. We do some fundraising as well, so we might have a charity shop where we ask volunteers to leave in items that they no longer want, and we sell those. We had a Christmas party every year, and that raises a couple of thousand euro. So we have those fundraising events, so advertising, fundraising. We also do some media training and media projects, certified training for, say, local authorities or for schools. In the past, we've done a lot of cross-border work with groups in Belfast and Derry on a cross-border basis. We also do some training here for staff, for new volunteers. So we have a course starting on Monday. There's five people doing that. We charge them 95 euro per head. So it's not a huge fundraiser, but it is. They do pay for their courses. We get media projects, large media projects and documentaries, outside broadcasts, programs for, say, local sports programs, and community groups. Could be a disability group, etc. And we can get some money through the government to actually produce those. But this is only a recent development. It's only taken place, really since COVID, when a lot of community and commercial stations were facing perhaps closing down because businesses weren't advertising. And the government stepped in at that stage to provide money for commercial and community radio stations to more or less do what they're doing, which is programming. And that scheme has been running now since 2022. We would have 9 staff here. We've got 4 people working part-time who are on a government jobs activation scheme. And then I've got 5 people, including myself, whose wages are supported, again, by a government jobs activation scheme. And then we have about 80 volunteers, as I mentioned earlier.
How does the radio internally function? You already explained the structure, but how, autonomous is the content that you produce, and maybe the editorial policies, and I don't know, the do you have, like, for example, at our radio student, we have elections for the editorial places every 2 years. So do you maybe have some similar practices, or are things a bit different maybe?
Yeah, a little different. I suppose we have, I'm the manager. I'm here 20 years. I have an assistant manager. I've somebody working on sales. I have somebody working on production. And they're responsible for a lot of training community groups and individuals. And they also produce news, sports, weather. And then if somebody working on research as well, who spends their time ringing up community groups and asking them to come in and talk about what they're doing. I have a part-time guy in the evening who comes in so that community groups can broadcast in the evening, which means we're open from 8 to 8, 7 days a week. And have a guy that works just the weekends as well. When you talk about elections, we do have elections to a voluntary board of management, and that happens every year at an annual general meeting. So the representatives could be six from community groups, six from the individual representatives, and two from statutory groups. So there could be up to 14 people on that board. They meet every month. And then there's a number of subcommittees. So we have a programming and technical subcommittee, and it's mostly staff and some of the board members and some volunteers sit in that and meet each month to look at new program proposals and to change the schedule if needed. We have a finance committee, we have a HR committee and a sound and vision committee, and we have an events team as well who organise fundraisers. And that's really how the station is structured. So every day you could have maybe 10 volunteers coming in, and you could have three or four community group representatives coming in. And we've got a number of staff here that keep the show on the road, as they say. So just talking about editorial policies, we don't have a playlist, which means that our presenters can play any music they like. Once they play the clean radio edit versions. If somebody comes up with an idea for a show, all they have to do is fill in a program proposal and send in a demo, and we can get people on air relatively quickly. So when it comes to editorial policies, most of our shows are actually music, so there's very few current affairs shows. But I have one full-time staff member that would be the editorial, would have the say basically on what goes out on air and what doesn't.
Well, okay, so for example, that like someone, some representative of some, community or something, like wants to do a broadcast about, some cultural or political topics, and how do you, like, what is the process of agreeing inside the radio that, like, this broadcast is, like, okay to go on air, and that it's not a problem if it goes on air, something like this.
Okay, so we don't really have any individuals doing a political program. So there's no one political party or one particular ideology that have a show. The politicians are invited to come into the studio and to talk. So there's a moderator in the studio or a presenter in the studio who asks questions. The last number of shows have all been music, alternative music, and we are looking possibly at an environmental show as well. So how do we choose? Well, we get a person to write down a program proposal, what they're going to be in, what's going to be in the show, maybe to record a demo, a 5-minute program, to come fill out a running order, tell us who the audience is. And if we're confident that we know that person, we'll probably give them a program. However, we would ask them to pre-record the program rather than going live until we're fully sure that there's not going to be any issues, or they're not going to stray away from what they originally said they were going to do. If they do, there's a procedure again where, so is any listener, can complain, and there's a complaints form on our website. All the radio stations have to have a complaints form, because if they send in a complaint, we have to deal with it here and reply, and if the person is not happy, then they can go to this statutory authority and it would be an investigation there.
Let's change the topic a bit. So how popular are the communal non-profit like media in Ireland, like, and are there like many third media sector, communal, radios or even other media in Ireland?
Yeah, like the third sector radio, community radios in Ireland, there's one, like we're in Dundalk, we're on the border. The closest one is in Dublin. So there's a number in the suburbs of Dublin. You have Near FM, you have Phoenix FM in Blanchardstown, you have Dublin South FM in Dundrum. You have an Irish language radio station in the centre of Dublin called Radio na Dlifa. So that's a what we would call a community of interest rather than a geographical community. We're geographical. There's one in Athlone in the centre of Ireland. There's one in Roscommon. It's a very small town. Athlone is a small town. There are three community radio stations that would be perhaps similar to what you're doing there, a student radio. There's one in Galway, in the National University of Galway, and it's called Flirt FM, F-L-I-R-T. There's one in Limerick called Wired FM, and there's one in Cork called University College Cork. So, are they popular? Yeah, I mean, the student radio probably don't broadcast during the summer, but come September, they set up a radio society and they have to train up a lot of people. Whereas we're like a small town radio. People do know who we are. They see us out on the streets. We broadcast from local football matches. If people have got something to advertise, they've got two local papers, three local papers, and really Dundalk FM and social media. It's hard to say how many people listen. A couple of thousand people probably listen, and we're probably music would be probably for the older generation, given the fact that most of our presenters would be in their 50s, 60s, and 70s and 80s.
Okay, Mr. Byrne, I think that we came to this to the conclusion of our interview. So thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure. Yeah, always interesting to find out about community radios in other countries.
Z Alanom Byrnom se je pogovarjal Finn. Intervju Radija Študent.